Hello, Tom. Philip here.
Philip, how are you?
I'm well. I arrived in the United States yesterday directly from Scotland, but I've had a very relaxed 24 hours, so I'm sort of feeling into this time zone now.
Well, wonderful. Welcome to the United States.
Thank you.
Thank you
How are you?
both. Oh, I'm doing wonderful. Oh, we're all laid back here in the South.
You're in
Good.
South Carolina.
Correct, yes.
Yes.
As we say
Well,
down here, how are y'all doing?
yeah, that's right.
Tom, maybe you could tell us, just give us maybe 30 or 45 seconds of background on Rock Ohm.
Sure, more than happy to. Rock Ohm was started less than a year ago as a vision to be the crossroads of music and spirituality. And what we like to do is touch base with musicians and artists that have something of a deeper substance, deeper meaning to say with their music and their art, that speak across a broad range of spiritual faiths, creeds, traditions. And we like to touch base with a variety of creative people that are inspired by music, moved by music, and they create music for others to be uplifted and explore a little bit more about themselves and the inner world and outer world.
Great. Well, did the CD arrive?
It did. Thank you very
Okay.
much, and I've
Good.
been through it multiple times, and each time it just gets better.
Good.
So, thank you. Most inspiring.
Thanks.
Gentlemen, I'm going to record this and we'll be able to transcribe it with ease that way. And we'll also feature this on a podcast at a later date. And we'll also have canned intros, canned exits for that. So everything will be edited and prepared with
Okay.
music mixed in between the questions
Nice.
and answers.
Great.
Do you have any questions of me?
No, that sounds clear, Tom. Thank you.
Well, I won't take much of your time. So, Sam, when did the inspiration for the music for a Celtic Mass of Peace first come to you?
Well, when I met Philip in actually the retreat in Pennsylvania in 2004, and then later at a retreat in Vermont in the following year, when he was in Vermont at this retreat, with some extra time, in fact, we were just talking about this. He had some time after the retreat. I had just improvised some music with a Scottish friend who plays pipes and Irish whistles during Philip's time with us. And then Philip had some time afterwards to write, and he wrote, I didn't know it at the time, but he wrote the words for the Celtic Mass for Peace. And when later I wrote to him when he was in Scotland and asked him if he would be willing to at least respond to something, because I was just deeply moved by his work and by the music and the possibilities of music that would capture and reflect something of what I was feeling about the theology and what he was expressing. He sent me the whole text and invited me to write music to it. So I was it was just a wonderful conjunction of creativity between the two of us, and it started our collaboration.
Philip, is this the first time you've comprised lyrics for such an endeavor?
Of this sort of scale, I've done some collaboration with musicians in relation to meditative chants. But this was the first time that I had written anything on the scale of a full mass to be sent to music. And one of my feelings throughout, and really from the very beginning, and now in a way that that I'm hearing when I listen to the Mass. One of the things I realize Sam has been so gifted at is to convey through sound what I have been trying to communicate through word. And there was an awareness when I was writing the words of the Mass that I wanted to both strike a deeply personal note, an intimate note, as well as a vast and cosmic note, as a way of speaking of the sacred presence that is at the heart of everything in the universe, but is also to be found in the most personal depth of our own being. So that combination of the personal and the cosmic was what I knew I wanted to put into the words, and then that's precisely what Sam has done through the music. And I mean, that's been very moving for us in our collaboration, but it's been wonderful to see people respond to it in those terms as sort of opening them into a boundless sense of presence within the universe, but also moving them very personally, often to tears, in terms of responding to presence that is deep within each one of us.
Well, Philip, you say that a Celtic masterpiece is written for all, including those well beyond the bounds of our own religious traditions. What is it about a Celtic Mass that will carry it beyond Christianity to be understood by other faiths, other faith traditions?
One of my convictions that grows increasingly out of dialogue and relationship with teachers in other traditions and with people well beyond the bounds of our Christian household, one of my sort of increasing convictions is that people both from within other traditions and also more broadly, simply out with the Christian tradition, I think many of them are looking to us to bring our most central treasure for the healing of the world. And I'm thinking of a native leader, a Pueblo teacher in New Mexico, with whom I had conversation a number of years ago, and we were standing on the edge of the courtyard of the little spirituality center in New Mexico where I do a lot of teaching. And looking onto the courtyard and imagining this to be a place where there would be dialogue between the great wisdom traditions of the world and a place that would focus on healing for creation. And I said to him, as we looked out on the space, I said, this is sort of like a table of humanity that we're trying to create here. And I said, if that is what this place is, I said, what should I bring to the table? And he spoke to me with a sort of simple but profound directness that I've now come to expect from native teachers. And he said, well, Philip, bring your treasure, bring Christ. And these words found their way deeply into my heart, because I realize that there are many of us within the Christian household that have not quite known how to bring our treasure, because our treasure, Christ, has so often been used to beat people over the head and to give them the impression that they need to become like us. All in the name of the truly humble one. You know, somehow we've created this arrogant tradition of giving the impression that we are to somehow triumph over or to dominate other traditions. So these words helped me realize that what many of us are struggling to find ways to do is to bring something very close to the heart of our Christian household, to bring it not in terms of saying, you know, you must join us to receive our treasure, or you must confess certain propositional beliefs about God in order to access our treasure. An awareness that we are to offer the heart of the treasure freely and openly for the sake of the healing of the world. And I think the way we've often celebrated communion has been exactly along the lines of putting all the conditions in place before we can actually share something from the heart of our Christian household. So that's been quite close to the initial conception and birthing of this project, that we want to find not only a new language of expressing the ancient wisdom of Jesus around peace, but we want to find new ways of sharing this ancient wisdom, and to do it in ways that speak right to the heart of this point in time, and especially to the longing for peace that we find in all of the great traditions and in the people of the world, even though we also live in the midst of such conflicted power tension.
Well, Sam, this music that you've composed has such a profound healing effect and an essence to it. Can you take full responsibility for it?
Oh, no. No. Much of that, it truly comes from, I'm a little speechless here. I really feel that whatever word you want to put to it, but that God, you know, uses us, puts us together, finds ways of in spite of ourselves, releasing wonderful things from us. It's been a great surprise for me. So no, I can't. I've been thinking and deeply and feeling music deeply for much of my life, but to have found words that start to unlock melodies and unlock feeling and help, you know. I'll give you one specific example. I mean, all creative people, I think, struggle with themselves, and that they tend to make things overcomplicated. But there, with this music, there's always been something that has been shaping it into something and keeping it very simple and is so beautifully said, something that touches a very personal place and also reaches through and out beyond to a very cosmic place of connection with all of life. So that's a lot of words to say. No, it's a very humble feeling that one ends up with feeling, having been swept up and having been privileged to be a part of something for which you can't really explain it.
Well, Sam has the gift of humility. I don't feel quite so humble speaking about Sam. So I'd like to claim that he does have great responsibility for this creativity. But to also set that in the context of one of my favorite teachers is the 14th century mystic Meister Eckhart. Mm-hmm. And Eckhart says that God is to be found in the human soul, not by addition, but by subtraction. Namely, we don't need to add anything to the human soul to find God. What we need to do is subtract, get the ego, the sort of self-serving, dividing ego out of the way to find God. And I think that's my reading of what's happened in Sam, that he's got himself out of the way enough to allow the one who is within us to be creative. So he is both totally responsible and not at all responsible.
Nice.
That's what I was trying to say, Tom.
Well, Philip, Philip, why does the mainstream Christian church know so little about Celtic mysticism when there's obviously a long, rich history there?
Yes, the I mean, a couple of things. One is to say that I think that there is a tremendous openness in much of mainstream Christianity as we've known it. I think that there's a great sort of turmoil of soul happening in which people are looking for ancient wisdom to speak in new ways for today. So, I think that while many will not necessarily be aware of the Celtic stream as a major resource, it's right to say that many, many, many people are becoming aware of it as a resource. And I mean, that's not to say that we all need to become Celtic Christians, which would be almost as absurd as saying we all needed to become Presbyterians or what other name we've used to define ourselves and separate ourselves. But it is to say that it's a significant resource, and that there has been a long history to rejection of the ancient insights of the Celtic world, and this began very early on in the 4th century when Christianity becomes religion of empire. Then there's a weeding out or a rejecting of what the empire considers to be inconvenient truths, and I think from the 4th century onwards, we see the imperial church in the Mediterranean feeling threatened by many of the ancient wisdoms of the Celtic tradition around reverencing creation or around reverencing the feminine or around openness to the realm of the mystical and of dream life. Because all of these realms, whether the mystery of matter or the mystery of the feminine and the mystery of the night and dream life, all of these realms are not easily controlled by empire. So I think a lot of the fear of what the Celtic tradition embodied and tried to give utterance to was a sort of threatening of the holders of power, and very, very close to the heart of the Celtic tradition has been a celebration of the well of wisdom as being something that is deep within us, not just to be accessed in a subjective individual way, but accessed together and in community and humbly, but nevertheless accessed as part of the healing of the world. And the way in which imperial religion developed, it was convenient for empire to say that wisdom and truth was more like a possession or a type of deposit which would be distributed from above, that is, from those who would, in a sense, tell us what to believe or tell us what the boundaries were. So the Celtic tradition was often feared for reasons that were related to power and manipulation of power. And some of that continues to be the case today. I think in any tradition where ultimate power is situated either with the Vatican, for instance, at one end of the Christian spectrum, or in a type of biblical literalism at the other end of the spectrum, there's fear around a stream of spirituality that takes seriously our responsibility to access the well of wisdom within ourselves and to see that well as infinite and to see it as forever to be accessed rather than having just expressed itself at one point in time. So it's there's much around the Celtic tradition that feels inconvenient, I think, to formalized religion.
Well, Sam, there are many collaborators on A Celtic Mass for Peace, but two stand out. Tell me about the contributions of vocalists Suzanne Adams and Elizabeth Von Trapp.
All right. Suzanne, absolutely wonderful young Scottish woman from Edinburgh who Philip was a friend of Philip's for some years and who did a recording with him called Sounds of the Eternal, which are beautiful meditative chants. It's a gorgeous album of a different scale and sort than the Celtic Mass for Peace, but absolutely beautiful. And when Philip invited us to Edinburgh a couple of years ago to celebrate the Mass, as far as it had been composed at that point, it wasn't as complete as it is now. There and at St. Giles Cathedral, Suzanne was part of the group of singers, and so we got to know her. And when it came time to finally record the Mass this last summer, an important part of the budget was to make it possible for Suzanne to come in and share her glorious voice and more than that, her spirit to that project. And Elizabeth von Trapp is, as you may know, the granddaughter of Maria von Trapp of the Sound of Music fame, and that whole family is spread fairly widely in Vermont. And Elizabeth has a career. She has several albums, and she's very, very spiritually oriented. And has, most of her music has some relationship to bringing peace and love and joy into people's lives. And so when I called her and asked her to consider being part of this, she was happy to do it. And she is on three of the songs.
Yes, indeed. Both Suzanne and Elizabeth, beautiful voices, nice contributions. I'll ask each of you this question, and then I'll wrap up with a question here. And we like to ask this of all of our interviewees, and we have a diversity of answers, and it's a rather simple question. In your opinion, why is it that music and the arts bridge barriers between people with such ease?
All right, I'll start, Tom. Music bypasses the cerebral cortex in a wonderful way. I'm sure you've had this answer in many, many forms, but it's a language. It's truly a language of the heart, of the emotion, of the nervous system, of the body. It's visceral and it's truly spiritual. It works its way past the thinking and the analytical mind, straight into the heart, and so. It has a magical way of unlocking, having people be able to connect their longing and their desires to some form of expression, and a way of also helping. I think it helps us all to be free of inhibition, where we might be shy of saying certain words to someone we love or care about, or I think the music helps us to be truly honest with our feelings, both to ourselves and to other people.
Philip?
Yes, I agree entirely, but I suppose I should add some words to that. But I think Edwin Muir Muir, M-U-I-R, Scottish poet, in one of his poems says that truth is not too complicated for expression, it is too simple for expression. And I think that the simpler we can be in our language, the closer we're coming to the profound truths of the human mystery and of creation. And I think that that art and music often accesses much more immediately that realm of profound simplicity within us. I think words will often take us in the direction of what distinguishes or separates us. Words can lead to that important, but I think less profound realm of differentiation and analysis. Whereas I think music and art are these gifts of expression that take us to the place that is profoundly unitive, because I think they come much more immediately out of the heart or the soul or that deepest well of energy within us. And I mean, for me, there's nothing more wonderful than a combining of these faculties of word and sound and image. And I think it's often when there's a convergence of these streams that we find ourselves being most deeply moved.
Well, will the mass be touring? Will the world be able to hear this beautiful work?
You'll need to ask my wife about that. But I hope the mass will be in many ways made available in many, many contexts. I mean, I'm not sure that Sam and I will always be able to be physically present, and it would be wonderful to be, because we have so loved being together at different points in the unfolding of this creativity. What part of what we're wanting to set in place are the sort of resources, musical resources, and clarity around enabling other people to access this creativity without us being present.
Right, Tom. So that's a wonderful opening for me to say that the scores and at least two or three different levels, sort of a complete version of a fuller version, which is expressed in the recording, and also some simpler or more basic ways, more easily accessible ways to smaller groups of people who would like to do all or part of it. All of those possibilities are going to be published and made available electronically, and probably in hard copy very, very soon. It's being worked on right now. There is one sort of manifestation that may be coming fairly soon, and that is this fall around the International Day of Peace. At least in Vermont, and possibly around the country, there are a number of churches that are interested and going to be working on using the Mass for Peace as a way of lots of places celebrating the same thing together at the same time, with kind of that common unitive purpose of being conscious of our deep longing and our need for to move toward peace and being and spiritual traditions and communities being helpful to the greater communities around us, and being able to move in that direction of really creating a culture of peace. but a real tour. I mean, I think Philip answered it really well. It needs to be accessible in lots of other ways. But we're very fortunate. In a couple of days, we're going to be together here in Minneapolis at the Westminster Presbyterian Cathedral, doing it live, really for the first time in its present state. So we're very grateful for that. Mm.
Could the future perhaps see a Spanish Mass for Peace?
Yes.
How discerning a man you are, Tom. I mean, you've spoken right to the heart of Sam here.
There are conversations beginning now, or continuing now, around finding the right way and for that to happen, both with the words and possibly with some re-instrumentation to explore some of the Andean sounds and some of the Central and South American sounds that could also, because it is truly there's a deep connection between the Celtic stream and what has been recently called liberation theology in Latin America. It's really very, very close. So there's a lot of reason to have a Spanish version of the Mass done. Yes.
And we in the Celtic world we're happy to claim most of Middle Europe at some stage. whereas by now the Celtic tends to refer to the Celtic fringe of Ireland, Scotland, Wales. At one stage, the Celtic peoples extended right across Middle Europe and were in places like Galatia and Galicia and Gaul and so on. So I think there are resonances in this tradition that speak into many other cultures that nowadays we might not refer to as Celtic. But I think even more important than some of the Celtic roots that can be discovered in different cultures and nations is writing from a depth that one can see as resonating with the heart of many other native spiritualities as well. Mm-hmm. And when we find those resonances, it might be interesting to point to points of cross-fertilization historically, but I think also at those points what we realize is that we're accessing a deep common well or spring in the human soul that expresses itself in parallel ways. So that for me is always an exciting point of dialogue and sharing across cultures. And I think it's when we're engaged in those points of sharing and common ground that we often understand more deeply the gift of our own tradition, that we, I think, we actually need one another to see clearly what our gift is.
Indeed. A Celtic Mass for Peace, Songs for the Earth. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Tom. It's been wonderful to speak with you.
Thank you, Tom, also from me.
Wonderful. God bless you.